Welcome to Mataco Talks. I'm Seamus Donoghue, the VP of Strategic Alliance in Mataco. Mataco Talks is now a weekly discussion on topical issues and thought leadership in the digital asset space. It's a live streamed conversation. You can ask questions, so please do use the chats during the conversation. After the call, it'll also be available as recordings. They can be found on our website, also on the major platforms, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. So please subscribe and leave a review. Today's title of our Mataco Talks is Custody 2.0, paving the way for digital asset adoption at scale. And we have our guest, the CEO of Custody Digit, Peter Hoffman. Welcome, Peter.
Hi, Seamus. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. And love the background. It's nice to feel like we're both in Switzerland. So it would be great to start just, you and I obviously have met many times, but we haven't really talked on a personal level. I'd love to hear your story, how you got into the crypto space before we get into the topic at hand.
Okay, how I get into the crypto space, right? I'm an engineer by heart, right? So I got always attracted by crypto. At that time, I also have to say I was working in the innovation field at Swisscom. So we did have a trend radar for the financial service industry. And somehow I came across, when was it? I would say 2014, something like that, across blockchain in general and Bitcoin. And being an engineer, I got fascinated, right? Mm-hmm. So started opening up an account at Coinbase and started my journey with the whole crypto space and later on then digital assets in general.
So you invested when first?
First, I would say 2 years. Not 100% sure about the year again. I remember the price. It was somewhere around 300 to 350. That's when I started. Guess that has been around 2014, 15, something like that.
So Custody Digit now is just a pastime to keep you busy because you're largely retired financially now?
No, actually, I remember that. We did then have a spike in the Bitcoin price, right? And that's where I sold everything. So I had to start over again.
I think we've all been on that journey. One or two times your returns is normally a home run in most markets from crypto.
Exactly.
It's like a huge underperformance, right? And Custody Digit, I mean, I just had a little anecdote. I was in Singapore, you know, what I think prior to the founding or during the founding of Custody Digit, I had a colleague who was one of the founders of Signum. And I remember mentioning that he had struck a partnership with Swisscom around custody. I guess that was part of the genesis of Custody Digit. So I loved it. I've always been curious. How did Custody Digit come about? And what is Custody Digit, I guess, is both questions.
Let's start with the question, what's Custody Digit, right? Custody Digit actually is an enabling platform for regulated financial service providers so that they can provide digital asset services to their end customer and don't have to tackle all the technical challenges of keeping private keys safe or how to actually integrate trading, brokerage, and all that. We're taking away the headache on that side for the regulated financial service providers. So I mentioned before, right, Swisscom is quite an innovative company and they want to grow. They have set up a special digital business unit. That's where they are focusing on growth opportunities outside of the core business. At that time, I was actually within that group and I was somehow into DLT, into crypto, and I came up that we should have somehow a platform for the banks that they can actually get much easier into cryptos as before. So I came up with the idea, pitched the idea to management, got the first founding round so that we can start developing concepts around. And then really a coincidence happened, right? At the Singapore FinTech Festival, we somehow met with Stefan, Matthias, and the whole crew around Signum. And they were looking for such a platform because they needed to start their journey. And that's how we get together and then decided, let's actually build it together. So Signum being our first customer, feeding in also what's required, what the requirements are, and building it up from there. That's pretty much the whole story.
So it was a bit of serendipity. I mean, was this 2017 or when was this?
I would say that was 17, 18. Yeah, so late 17, I would say.
Yeah, normally that FinTech Festival is in November, so that would make sense. Yeah,
exactly.
And And did you already, I mean, it's quite an intuition in 2017 to think that there was a use case for banks. I mean, what brought that on? Was there actually banks, were you seeing banks doing anything in the space? And why would you expect a bank would embrace what was considered, let's say, still kind of a dark web asset at the time, basically?
It was, right? But luckily, that's changing quite dramatically, I would say. Yep. But being part, right, of the, or I was working my entire life, right, in the financial service industry, always at the intersection between technology and the business. And I see, although a few see it differently, that the regulated financial service providers do have a big asset, right? And that's trust. And I see also, right, that what we have seen also with other fintech trends, they may start outside of the traditional players, but then when it's getting really big, it's when the traditional players are coming into the space as well, because they can really foster that adoption. And I always believed in that story, that what actually was missing is regulation and trusted parties in it. We have seen slowly also in Switzerland at that time, right, that the regulator is moving forward on it, not that far into the journey, but that he is moving forward. So we thought that's the absolute the best opportunity to get into the play. We also, right, being or Swisscom having as a founding partner, of course, you have to play in the regulated space. That was a precondition. And it was also actually an ideal leverage of the assets Swisscom is having. They do have customer relationships to several banks, of course, in Switzerland. Actually, they are operating the application architecture of around 80 Swiss and international banks in their data centers. So it was more or less an obvious move to do it that way.
That does make sense, but it's still very, very forward looking, I would say, for a large, very large institution in Switzerland.
Yes, as usual, right? Yeah, that's maybe a good point. Yeah. The timing, right? That's always, if you draw business cases, you anticipate that the change will happen earlier. But you are underestimate actually the impact in the long run. But that's a good point on Swisscom itself. That's maybe also something you need to know, right? In telecom, you have special dynamics there. 90% of the revenue sources, they change every 10 years. 90% of your revenue. Compare that to the banking industry. That's a totally different game.
That I wasn't aware of. No, can you give some context? Why is that? How is that?
Just give you an example, right? Maybe you remember SMS in the old times.
Of course. Paid messaging.
Paid messaging. Yeah. Huge business. Huge business for Swisscom. And it fall apart from one day to the other pretty much.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So you have constantly to innovate as a telecom provider. And that's also in the DNA of Swisscom. So they are constantly looking for new services. And that's quite the major difference between being a telecommunication company and being a financial service provider.
That's interesting. So we have the surface of a very conservative large institution, but they have to be nimble in terms of reacting and forward looking. Fascinating. So you had this moment of serendipity in 2017 at the FinTech Festival. How did that relationship with Signum evolve to what it is now? And where is that relationship now?
So actually the relationship is fostering, right? We are working together more or less on a daily basis with Signum. That's and also happy, right, that we can contribute to the success of Signum. They are, in my opinion, really found the place in the space and doing well and prospering. Also, interestingly, right, I don't know if you have seen the latest press announcement during December last year we did. Actually, our ecosystem grew with an additional member. So the Six Digital Exchange joined as well. And that's great, right? You now have, in my opinion, at least the perfect combination of an ecosystem with a young, nimble, digital-focused bank in it, Signum. We do have Swisscom as a tech provider who knows how to operate security-sensitive infrastructures. And we do have someone who is bringing in the knowledge and also the strategic view on a market infrastructure. It's great to work with all of them together.
It's a very interesting mix. So you have the first crypto or FINMA-regulated crypto bank. and you've got this SIX, which is the largest exchange in the payment infrastructure, Switzerland, and yourself together as one team. I mean, what's the go-to-market on that consortium?
So the go-to-market on that is, right, we do have different services and they are also independent, right? We do have Signum Bank who is providing banking services. To be a little bit more precise, it's the SIX Digital Exchange. So SDX who joined our ecosystem. Okay. They do have the digital platform they are building right now as a market services, but there's close collaboration between all the parties. And actually, it's also good, in my opinion, because with that, right, the variety in the Swiss ecosystem, we are keeping, but really moving forward in the maturity of the whole service and the infrastructure Switzerland is available in Switzerland for digital assets. Let's put it that way.
So you mentioned the context of the Swiss ecosystem and availability for in the Swiss market, but is there a global play here as well? Or how do you guys look at the global opportunity?
Of course, there's a global play as well, right? As Metaco, as we're being an infrastructure provider in the end, or a platform provider, you normally do have fixed costs, right? Quite a lot. You have to build the stuff and set it up. And then to actually operate it in an economical way, what you need is load. And at the moment, if you see the volumes, although I looked up Bitcoin market cap is 1 trillion, or is right now above 1 trillion, you need to have load on such a platform. That's also, especially from a Custodigit point of view, where we also have a view and go to market on the European market as well. And it's also, in my opinion, at least, I don't know how you see it, it's getting moving in the European market. You do have a regulatory change coming up in Germany. And with MiCA, the regulation in the whole European Union will be set 2024, if I recall it correctly. So it's an interesting time, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's not just there. I think most jurisdictions now are aligning, basically, and we're seeing even what was a laggard of the US market really moving to the forefront of movement, basically, there. Every major firm embracing it. I mean, you made an interesting comment. You talked about basically the vision that you thought was obviously going to be regulated at some point would be a catalyst. But I think, one of the biggest, most important ones is the size of the market, as you mentioned. When 2017, it was very hard for institutions to care because transactions, just the liquidity wasn't there. But when you're talking about a $2 trillion asset class, or as you mentioned, a trillion for Bitcoin alone, this is viable. And particularly when you out of that, Coinbase can have $70-80 trillion market cap $70-80 billion market cap in a $2 trillion asset class. It's becoming something that's hard to ignore.
Absolutely.
So why don't we move on? I mean, the topic obviously was custody 2.0. I mean, what does that mean? What is custody 2.0?
Actually, it's a good statement you made, right? What we see right now in the market is that substantial volume is coming in. We see it's not only the retails, the early tech-savvy retail customers going into digital asset. We, at least from our perspective, we see now the institutional investors' interest into that asset class. And you're facing a totally different question and challenges. If we have a look, right, in the past, it was all about how do we actually keep those private keys safe? You remember the days with the nano-ledger stakes, right? That's how we started. Yep. Then let's say custody 1.0 was about having some kind of an enterprise application where you can securely store the private keys, have somehow an integration with the execution venues. And if we now have the context of institutional investors coming into the play, different volumes, different ticket sizes on trading transactions, different questions are coming up. Questions are coming up, actually, how do I build an efficient market infrastructure? How do I ensure settlement in an efficient way with bigger tickets? How I actually provide the liquidity? How do I integrate that then into existing core banking applications? And that's now, from my point of view, really the questions we have to face and solve in custody 2.0. In order to have a market infrastructure ready, that we can actually move to the next level of adaptation in the digital asset market.
So if I take what you're saying, it's not just about keeping keys safe, it's about the full breadth of services that you can build around custody as well, which in the traditional asset space, you see, obviously, the managing corporate actions, the boring sec lending, and everything in between, basically. So that you see this sort of trading, of course. And then basically you see that as the kind of table stakes in this space now for custody 2.0 as well. It's not just custody. So, strictly speaking.
Exactly. For me, the term custody, right, it's a little bit misused in the crypto space, or there are different understandings. If we are talking about the keeping the private key safe, I call that safe keeping more. And the custody for me is more the regulated services. But in my interpretation, I always take custody and the whole brokerage trading topic together because it's somehow interlinked. But back to your point, I do have the observation and feeling that the security part of how to keep those private keys safe, that's solved, right? Or it's seen to be as solved. It's not an easy thing to do, don't get me wrong. It's really engineering discipline, how to build secure and safe system in order to keep them safe. But it's the challenge is solved and now we can move on.
I agree. And there's this relatively standardized OPSEC around that as well. So we've got that part down. Yeah. Ostensibly, it should be done in most institutions. So for you, basically, are you regulated? Because that obviously leads to the question, given the focus on regulation.
So CustoDigit itself is not regulated, right? Because we are providing a platform to the regulated financial service industry, which is then providing a regulated services to their end customers. So we are really a tech platform provider and don't need a regulation. And we do have that even somehow in writing. So we engaged with the regulator early on during our journey. I don't recall exactly when, but we did have a lot of discussion and even got a non-action letter from the regulator here in Switzerland.
And is it the same sort of approach in other markets? Engaging with the regulators and understanding how to be that platform provider in those markets?
Yes, from our side, we do that, right? Engaging with the regulator early on our journey. Of course, then first liaison with some lawyers who can actually guide you through the regulations coming up. I don't know how you see it, but in most countries, the regulation is still a little bit in flux.
Yeah.
And you need to know what is the latest thinking, in what direction is the regulation going on. And that's how we normally do it. We liaison with some lawyers who know the current state of the regulation and see the direction it is going. And what we see is from a structural point of view that most of the countries go in a similar direction as Switzerland is. So that you have that model where you don't need a license if you are a platform provider. Because if that would be different, it would be also an interesting question, right? A lot of those banks are using core banking system. The question would be, need then the core banking provider regulated as well, if that would be the case?
I mean, I think that's a good analogy. I think that's what we think of, the framework we often think about as well, basically, right? You're just delivering a service as a platform.
Yeah.
So, with that framework, what is your, like I said, what is the typical client you're facing, or and how have you seen that client evolve, or the type of client evolve since you guys have been in the market? Who are the early customers, and who do you see now get in the market, and what's driving that decision process?
So, right, what we observe is, as I mentioned before, the sentiment around cryptocurrency specifically, let's make one step back. I have seen that the financial service industry was always interested in the tokenization part. They see there, or I didn't understand that why, it's seen as a big opportunity for process efficiency, but also opening up new asset classes. What I have seen in the last, let's make it 9 to 12 months, that the sentiment on the cryptocurrency almost changed 180 degrees. Mm-hmm. So it's getting accepted, more or less accepted, speculative asset class. So that sentiment changed, in my opinion, in the financial service industry. What we see right now is that a lot of the bigger banks are making their minds around how and what they should provide actually to their end customers or to the customers in general, starting really projects. Then we have, let's say, the mid-sized banks, and there we see quite a lot of movement right now, right? That they are really starting projects and having the decision if they want to move into cryptocurrencies as well. Would say that's an interesting move you have seen, that they are really at the crossroad now. Yes or no, we're gonna do it. It's really in the last 12 months, they moved quite a lot on that journey, I would say. And then we see the smaller banks, which also want to complement their product portfolio with digital assets in general. And a few of them are really also focusing, I call them edge cases, but very interesting edge cases, where they see that an interesting business case can be realized.
What do you mean by edge case? Can you give an example of some of those edge cases?
Sure. Right. For example, we are in a project where we do the tokenization of art, for example. So opening up a new asset class. But it's not only opening up a new asset class. It's also process efficiency is in. Plus, the interesting part is as well, right? Actually for a bank that they can ensure that the assets under management will even increase with this new asset class for them. So that's for me an example of a little bit an edge case, but with a viable rationale behind how to make money and how actually to provide added value.
I always wonder if this is it just a technical exercise to prove it's true. Doable, or is there actually demand for, you know, I want to buy a, you know, 1 millionth fraction of a Monet or a Beeple, or is there actually an end demand for this type of thing?
Yeah, maybe the use case I just described comes from a little bit a different angle. Yes, there seems to be a demand, but it's not only that you own, right, a small part of a Monet or whatever. It's also interesting, right, in certain segments, the inheritance case.
That's a different angle, okay.
It's a different angle slightly, but a very interesting one, right, how you can actually bring in process efficiency if you have to split it up in inheritance case. And it's also quite interesting from a banking perspective. Normally, that would be then outflow of assets under management, right? And with such a model concept, you can actually ensure that the asset under management stays with the bank or even additional assets under management are coming in.
So if I understand that, you're saying basically the asset doesn't necessarily have to be liquidated. It can be liquidated in portions to those that inherit it that require the liquidity, and the others can maintain the painting their grandfather purchased or whatever.
Exactly, exactly. Right? Go on.
No, go ahead, please. Yeah.
That's at the stage, I would say, in my opinion, the tokenized assets are right now, right? First viable use cases are really emerging and getting traction. Although, in my opinion, it will take a couple of years still to really get substantial volume in that specific market. But there is added value in tokenization.
Let's say those are value propositions I hadn't thought about, which are quite persuasive. You know, we should go to some of the questions here. So, I mean, we have some questions I should go to, rather. So, I mean, you mentioned around what the demand you're seeing from clients. Can you put that in the context of one of the questions is, what IT solutions are you providing for Sygnum? So what are you providing for Sygnum, and what's the offer that you guys can offer to a bank now that's going in this market?
Okay, that's a good question. Right, we provide a SaaS platform to Sygnum, for example, but also to other regulated financial service industry providers, which is an extension of their existing application core banking they are having for digital assets. So with our platform, you can actually provide custody services to your end customers. You can provide trading market service to the customers. That's just the main two use cases which are covered by our platform. And as a bank, you're getting all the functionality you need in order to run your business processes in an efficient, compliant, and secure manner.
So what tech does the client have to manage themselves, if any?
The core banking, the fiat side, of course, and with our SaaS service, he doesn't need to manage any tech on his side. We are taking care of all the technical challenges and the headaches which come with that.
That's a nice friction elimination, because we do know from our own experience that it's non-trivial managing the tech stack.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, we've got some other questions, maybe a bit very specific. I don't know if you have a view basically around the cryptocurrencies, whether they're, you know, things like Bitcoin or tokenized Swiss francs, whether they're off balance sheet in case of bankruptcy. Is this something you want to touch on, or should we?
Say it again. What was the question?
It's in the chat. Can you confirm the cryptocurrencies with Bitcoin or I guess tokenized Swiss francs are off balance sheet in case off balance sheet of a bank in case of bankruptcy? I mean, this is more from a banking side rather than tech provider, but if you have a view, you can address that. Otherwise, another question around.
Go on. I would have an answer, but it's a lengthy one, right?
Oh, well, please. Well, we got a few minutes left. So,
okay.
2 or 3 minutes, we're good.
So, although regulation is changing right now, it was actually we implemented a fully segregated concept, right, with our platform. And the current regulation foresees that if you are implementing a fully segregated concept, that you don't have to, as a bank, does not have to underlay it with equity on their side with the 800% rule. Right. So that was one of the reasons, apart from security, why we have implemented a fully segregated model in our platform. I hope that answers that question.
It does. But those rules have, in case of Switzerland, have evolved, have they not?
They are evolving. Yeah. They are evolving. And as far as my knowledge goes, this 800% rule will change over time.
Yeah. Right. So you can manage an omnibus account, still have segregated assets. That's
exactly.
And I guess we have time for one more question here. There's about top three skills you would suggest for people that want to get into this industry and benefit from the new technology. Given the seat where you've been, your career path, any insights?
So passion, I would say, right? Somehow, at least that's my case. I was always fascinated by DLT, or to be more precise, by digital assets. So the industry is moving so fast, and to keep up and be on top of the latest development, in my opinion, you need to have some passion for it. Otherwise, you cannot keep up. But definitely helping from my point of view, right, is if you're having a financial service industry knowledge, because what's going on right now is, in my opinion, that we see that digital assets are going into the way of the existing processes banks have in place and getting integrated. So if you don't know DLT, cryptocurrencies, it's always good to have the knowledge how the traditional world is functioning right now. And if you have a good understanding of DLT, or at least have an understanding of DLT and cryptocurrencies, how it works, what the specific characteristics are, that's helping as well.
I fully agree. I think the passion for the space and some financial literacy, and you're off to the races here. You know, we've got a couple minutes and then we've got to wrap it up. So I got one question, which I would like to ask. I mean, what model do you think will win out? Traditional banks get in the space, or new entrants? Will the new entrants eat the banks, as they say, basically the banks in the end are just too slow?
I do have an unpopular answer to that. Both will win, right? We have seen that in the past with innovation in the financial service industry. And in my opinion, the same will happen also with digital assets. There will be a few new entrants who will make it. We have seen Coinbase, for example. Banks will not go away. They will embrace digital assets soon, or as soon as it's getting really substantial to them. And they do have the advantage or the assets of having the trust, of having existing customer relationship, which they then can leverage. Of course, also in the financial service industry, a few may miss that trend, and actually they will lose that revenue or that business. But in general, I would say, will be a coexistence of both, as we have seen with other innovation in the financial service industry.
good insight, Peter. Well, hey, the time's up. It's been good having you here. So I appreciate the time and the insights. Love to have you back again in the future.
Thank you very much, Seamus. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Peter. So thanks for joining Mataco Talks. As said, the recordings after this will be available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And Mataco Talks will be back the next edition with a special four-member, 2x2. And we'll check the website for the timing and look forward to seeing you next time.